You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Bregman drives one deep to left field. Forget about it. Two-run home run, Alex Bregman. Three batters in. It's 3-0 Astros.
Don't let Alex Bregman get hot. He kind of completes this lineup for the Houston Astros. I have two lies in effect. A couple of stats here that I want to mention now. We'll get interaction on this and then say which of the ones is a fact later at the end of the segment. So two lies in effect, three factoids. Two of them are lies. One of them is real. Alex Bregman has a higher on-base percentage than Jose Altuve. Kyle Tucker leads the Astros in games played. Michael Brantley leads the team in hits. Two of those are lies. One of them is a fact. We'll let you know which one at the end of the segment. But if you want to guess, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Bregman homered yesterday. Got on base a couple of times. 2 for 3. A couple of runs or a couple of RBIs. Knocked in a run. Is it 5-5 games?
I think so.
It was his 8th homer of the season yesterday. But look, we talk a lot about Bregman and his struggles that he's had so far to the season, which he's had. There's no denying that. Yuli's had his struggles this season. There's no denying that. I don't think that Bregman's ever going to get back to what he was in 2018. I never think he's going to hit 41 home runs like he did in 2019. Yeah. But I still think he can be a good ball player. I still think he can be very good in Major League Baseball.
I think home runs and average is not going to be what people expect what he encapsulated in kind of a career year or two. But I think he can still be a 270 hitter that hits, 25 bombs.
Right. I think that's who he is. And I think that that's fine. Like, even at the – if he's giving you solid defense and he's putting up those numbers, you can live with that for Alex Bregman. And, you only have him for two more years, too. Like, does Alex Bregman sign another contract with the Houston Astros? I tend to doubt it. Because he's got two more years after this one. He'll be 29-30 in those next 2 years. I don't think that James Click's going to sign Alex Bregman in his 30s to another deal. So Bregman is who Bregman is at this point. But if Bregman can heat up, and he is kind of heating up here, it extends the lineup. Because one of the biggest holes for this, like, Yuli's a hole. And when Yuli was hitting 5th, it hurts you a lot more than now when he's hitting 6th. Because he's hitting right behind Yordan Alvarez. And if he's hitting right behind Yordan Alvarez gets on base a lot. Yuli's doing next to nothing offensively. So it kind of breaks up the flow
around
of offense.
Him to get to.
So it's why I love the flip of Tucker and Yuli. Like, even if you want to just ride Yuli out and see if he can ever turn it around. And maybe you do that the rest of the season. I hope not, but maybe you do. You can live with Yuli further down in the order than hitting behind Yordan Alvarez. So that was a big decision there for Dusty Baker that I think has led to more runs. And I think it's one of the reasons the Astros haven't scored a ton of runs this year is because their best offensive player had Yuli Gurriel, who's been one of the worst offensive players in all of baseball, hitting right behind him. If we're being completely honest, the 3-hole has been a black hole for the Astros for a good chunk of this season as well to start the year. And whenever you're hitting in such an important spot in the batting order, the 3-hole is important. But also hitting in front of Yordan Alvarez, you need some production there.
But yeah, I think, Jeremy, there's other we talked about the benefits of playing a soft version of your schedule that they played through May and into June, right? The other benefit of the schedule is you didn't need a guy in the 3-hole as much as you're going to need him now.
You can live with it.
Right. You could live with it back then. But now when you're starting to play this gauntlet of games, starting with the two New York teams for these 9 games, and then going on from there to play some better teams, you realize now you need a 3-hole. He's heating up at the right time. I just don't want the false expectations of Astros fans to think because he's heating up, that means he's going to hit 300. He's going to turn the average around. He's going to start just going on this tear where the average gets back where it's supposed to be. The home runs get where they're supposed to be. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But in the best case scenario, he gets it back to respectability average-wise. He keeps getting on base. He ups the power numbers a little bit, but he's productive in the 3-hole because the hole you dug for yourself for this point in the season is not conducive to you getting back to 300 hitting.
Right.
But if you get your average up, but you keep getting key hits and getting on base, you're doing your job.
Yeah, I think that's all you can ask for Bregman. I don't think it's fair to compare.
And defensively, he's playing his tail off because the barehanded plays he made in the Met series alone, he can play defense, and I think a lot of it's mental. He forgets about the defensive side of the ball a little bit because he's so focused on when he's scuffling, why he didn't get a hit, and he's grinding in his head, and I don't think he focuses on defense as much.
Yeah, I think whenever you're going well, like you kind of play the game with a little bit more confidence. I was looking at Fangraphs today, and Alex Bregman has a top 20 WAR in American League position players, which is kind of astonishing considering the start that he had. But if you get a hot Alex Bregman, because we've talked a lot about this offense, right? Like, you know, we've had the discussions and we've had the disagreements. Is this Astros offense good enough to get you to a World Series and to win you a World Series? I believe it is. A lot of people think that it's not. Most people, I would say, think that it's not. But if Alex Bregman can produce like halfway between what he's been in 2022 to what he was in 2018, 2019, and now you get like a legitimate offensive player in front of Yordan Alvarez, it extends the lineup. It changes the scope of the lineup. And now you have guys getting on base at a higher rate in front of Yordan Alvarez, who is one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. I think that's why people who believe in the Astros offense think that they can score a lot more runs than they currently have because they expect Alex Bregman to be better. Like, the Astros are top three in the American League in slugging percentage. Like, bad offenses aren't top three in the American League in slugging percentage. The problem has been runners in scoring position. And if you're getting on in front of Yordan Alvarez, you're probably going to have pretty good numbers with runners in scoring position. And then I think dusty lineups have been part of the problem. Yuli hitting fifth, I would point to that. Look, Bregman was a problem hitting in the three spot for quite a while.
No doubt.
And until recently, really the last week,
just like we said the other day, too, even rolling with a hot hand. It's one thing to say that I'm not going to move a hot hand up in the batting order. It's another thing to say after you get hot that you're going to sit down and take your rest day because that's what I just feel like you need to do. You know, you just sit down. I think we know Dusty's going to Dusty, and that is the frustrating part because it's hard to build consistency and continuity as an offense when he's constantly tinkering and sitting guys down and not doing what needs to be done to give you the best chance to score runs on a nightly basis. But even with all those things said, because of the schedule and the way that you have taken advantage of it because of the roster that you have, no matter what lineup he puts out and where he's hitting guys, at least they've done what they needed to do to build the lead that they have in the division.
And a good Alex Bregman just changes the way this lineup plays.
It absolutely changes
the way this lineup looks and produces.
You can focus on the trade deadline being more about pitching if Alex Bregman just gets back to respectable Alex Bregman.
I was yesterday, since the Astros weren't playing, I was looking for things to do. I watched highlights of Trey Mancini hitting baseballs.
Oh, boy.
Trey Mancini in this lineup.
I pulled a U and watched the College World Series, and you watched highlights of Trey Mancini.
I mean, I watched highlights on my phone. I was watching the College World Series on my television. So
you said you only watched the ninth inning.
I was watching the highlights during the ninth inning. Lo and behold. 713-780-3776. Ocho is saying, curious to hear if the Yankee fans have created any new chance with the Astros in the Bronx tonight. Yankees are stinking 51-18.
They're
on pace for 120 wins, more wins than any other team in Major League Baseball history.
They're also the Utah Jazz of the playoffs over the last, say, 10 years plus. So, you know, miss me in the regular season until we get to the playoffs and you prove you can beat the Astros and you can get where you need to go to get where you're supposed to be every single year when we hear and Vegas says, Yankees, Yankees, Yankees. Guess what? Quit yanking my chain until you can beat your daddy, and then you can show that you can actually win it all one time. At least the Dodgers won at least one time when it wasn't bitching about the Astros.
8437 says, when it comes to getting a better player in a trade, I have to look at the team and as it's performing right now. I can't think about if Bregman decides to wake back up. I have to make a move to make this team better while thinking Bregman is performing the way he is currently.
So you can get by with Bregman if you make a trade for a first baseman. If you get Trey Mancini, then Bregman, no matter which Bregman he gives you enough because you get another solid bat in the lineup.
Bregman isn't even a top three offensive problem on this team. There's three other offensive positions that are way worse than Bregman's
catcher,
producing.
Catcher, center, field, first base.
Yeah, and it's a no-brainer. So if I'm looking to add offense to this team, third base is pretty far down that list. 713-780-3776. So the two lies and a fact. Alex Bregman is a higher on-base percentage than Jose Altuve. Tucker leads the Astros in games played. Michael Brantley leads the team in hits. Which of those three is a fact?
Is a fact?
Is a fact. Which of those three is a fact?
Tucker leads the team in games played.
The fact is that Alex Bregman has a better on-base percentage than Jose Altuve.
You were leading the audience because I knew that was going to be it.
I thought you were going to say that. I tweeted it yesterday. Thanks for taking a look at Jeremy Branham. Bregman, 349 on base. Altuve, 345 on base. Alex Bregman makes less outs this season, the entire year, than Jose Altuve does. That's pretty fascinating. The guy that leads the team in games is actually Alex Bregman. And what was the other one that leads the team in hits? That was Yordan Alvarez. Alvarez leads the team in hits. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Will, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Will?
Yeah, I just have a quick thought on Bregman. Now, I go to the games a lot, and I think he is actually hitting the ball very well. I think more of he's just having a lot of bad luck when it comes to where he's getting the ball hit to. He's being smarter at the plate and taking a lot of walks, getting on base a lot like you just talked about. So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that. More luck has to do with anything about Bregman.
Yeah, his expected batting average, and when we see the exit velocity, too, that he's barreling the ball, those are encouraging signs. And the one thing that we've both been on board with is the fact that he's changed his approach at the plate, too, because he's always been a guy that can cover all fields, and he can take a ball on the outside corner to right field. This year, it seems like he's been hell-bent and focused on pulling everything. Lately, during this hitting streak and a little before that, he started to be open to taking the outside pitch to right field again, and it's paying dividends.
If you look at Bregman's expected numbers that you were talking about, mm-hmm. his expected numbers are far better. Like his current batting average, .229. His expected batting average is .269. And then you look at some of the other advanced stats like WOBA. His current WOBA is .332. His expected WOBA is .363, which WOBA is like OPS. Whereas you look at Yuli Gurriel, his real numbers are actually better than his expected numbers. Not batting average, but like the WOBA, the ones that actually matter. So, yeah, to Will's point, Bregman has hit into some bad luck. 713-780-3776 if you want to weigh in. Also, when we return, let's reset the expectations, maybe, of this Gotham gauntlet. We know that the Houston Astros were playing 9 games against the best team in the NL, the best team in the American League. Should we reset the expectations of this 9-game Gotham gauntlet after the Astros started 2-0, we'll discuss. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. For men and women, it starts with hormone therapy because you want more energy in your life on a daily basis because you want to win the day. You just feel like it's been getting away from you, and you just you run out of juice, and you really want to take a nap or fall asleep, and you don't have the energy to complete the tasks that you wanted to get done in a day, and you feel like there's nothing that can change that. Apollo Men's Health can change that for both men and women. Like I said, it starts with hormone therapy. It could start with a B12 shot every week because both of those are going to give you more energy on a daily basis. You can check out all the ways they can help you with that, as well as all the different ways they can get you on a workout program and chart your results with like body composition analysis, or you can recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy. Your health is your wealth, people, and you have to invest in yourself just like you do in the stock market. And the people at Apollo Men's Health are here to help. That's why you make the first appointment. You go to apollomh.com. And when you find out that you're going to start the process of booking your appointment, you'll also find out that most major insurances accept discounts for military personnel and first responders. But more so than that, you're going to find out that the people that work there really care about their patients, and they want to see you get back to where you want to go, get your goals accomplished, get the results you need, and feel better on a daily basis. Check them out. Mention ESPN 97.5 and my name, Joel Blank, and you're going to get a free B12 shot on your first official visit or a free body composition analysis. And then be honest with them. They're going to ask you tough questions and also try to find out what your goals are and what you're trying to achieve. When you give them honest answers, they can set you up on a plan that works. They can get you the results that you desire. Check them out today. Go to the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're talking about Bregman and getting hot. Don't let him get hot. 713-780-3776. 6030 says, center field is what we need. Yuli will come around and his defense is too good. I said before, trade for Mullins.
Interested. That kid coming up had a night last night.
I'm curious to see what they do with Myers. Yesterday was the last day of his rehab assignment. So you figure, especially since he had a good day at the plate yesterday, and James Click said they're not even really looking at the numbers, they're just looking at the health, you would think that Jake Myers might be on his way to the Bronx to get the call up.
I think so. I mean, he had 2 home runs last night. And take it a step further, Jeremy, and when you start talking about what James Click has said when he has been speaking to members of the media, he has said that Jake Myers is their center fielder in their future. And he is the center fielder of their future and is in their plans long term. If that's going to be the case, he's going to get every opportunity to play. And so when he's ready to play And he looks like he's healthy enough to play because not only is he hitting home runs, but he's been playing center field. He just hasn't been hitting the ball. They're going to give him a chance to get back out there and show what he can do.
Yeah, I don't think you trade for center field. I mean, first base to me is the area. I know a lot of people have a lot of loyalty to Yuli Gurriel, which I understand. I get. He's been a very he's part of the core four. He helped you win a title. He's been a huge factor to this organization during this golden era. I'm worried that he's not going to be able to come around, though. And how long of a leash do you
especially
give?
Because of his age.
38 years old. Yeah. How long do you give a leash to a 38-year-old that can't catch up to fastballs, is taking terrible at-bats? Now, he has been a little bit better in June, but still nowhere near as good in June as what you would expect from a first baseman, a premium offensive position for what you hope is a World Series contender.
Yeah, look, I mean, the thing is, if it was just one of these guys, you would expect it from Yuli because of his age alone. Like, at a certain point, you're going to have... you're going to fall off. And in most cases, when you fall off, the fall is steep. It is a quick fall, and you just never recover. You don't expect that from Alex Bregman at his age with what he's done and where he is in his career. With Yuli, you can understand it. Mm-hmm. And that's why it hurts so much as Astros fans, because there is that affection because of what he's done for this franchise in a short period of time, because what he meant to these successful teams that the Astros have had. So you don't want it to happen, but reality says it's going to happen to everybody, and you have to accept it when it does. It's just more difficult to accept because you're dealing with it with Bregman and him and trying to figure out center field and catcher as well. If the Orioles want to do a yard sale and do a Cedric Mullins package with Trey Mancini, that's great. Sure. But you also have to come up with what they need to appease them. And how does that hurt you if you have to give up one of your starters or some of your farmhands when you know you're kind of depleted in your system?
Yeah, I mean, if you get Mullins and Mancini, like I would have hesitation on the return that you're sending them, but I'd also be very excited on what it would mean for the Astros in 2022. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's going to be very expensive. See, there's two things with Yuli that kind of stick out. Like, one of the facts is that it's a premium offensive position. Like, you need some offense there. I understand he's good defensively and he scoops out Jose Altuve's throw, and that's very important, but give me an offensive player there.
You know how you're spoiled when it's not? It's because somewhere else where you're not expecting it, you get it. Like, for years, how good Springer was in center field. If you had a Springer in center field and in your lineup, you could easily kind of be okay with Yuli being who Yuli is right now, or the same way that they've deep covered Maldonado for these last couple of years. You can't do it when you already have holes at positions where you're kind of taking a step backwards offensively.
And you can understand taking a step back offensively for a premium defensive position, which first base is not, even though Yuli plays it at a high level. The second thing with the Yuli conversation is, like, look how this lineup looks with Tucker in the five spot instead of Yuli in the five spot. Like, protection for Yordan, you're scoring more runs. Now do that with, like, a very good offensive first baseman in the lineup and not Yuli in the lineup, and all of a sudden this lineup is extended even further. And I think you have it looks of a very dangerous
depending
offense.
On where that first baseman hits in the lineup too, Jeremy.
I would put him sixth.
But I also think you could be strategic because it could help some of the other positions we've been talking about. If Alex Bregman gets a stick around him at first base in the lineup, then guess what? We've seen Alex Bregman be pitched around, nibbled on the corners, but we've mentioned the fact that the ump's been really giving the calls to Bregman early in counts, kind of setting him back and putting him in a hole. They're not going to nibble as much if Bregman is hitting before a first baseman that's a stick that could knock guys in.
Well, you would think that, but he's walking with Yordan hitting behind
him. True, but I'm also saying, though, but you add another bat in the lineup, now you can't hide at all. Now Bregman might even get to see better pitches. If he sees better pitches, that could be a boost for him on top of whoever you add in the lineup.
I can't believe how many walks Alex Bregman has when Yordan Alvarez hits behind him. Like,
but the other thing is, I can't believe he has the walks that he has when the umpires have been giving the calls early in counts against him.
He's been getting some corners called on him, but the dude has 40 walks on the year, and he's hitting in front of Yordan Alvarez. How are pitchers walking Bregman 40 times whenever you have Yordan Alvarez on deck? It's mind-blowing. 713-780-ESPN. So the Astros started this Gotham Gauntlet, courtesy Jake Asman for the nickname, with a 2-0 record. They swept the Mets in the mini two-game series. Now they're headed to the Bronx with four games against the Bronx Bombers. Should be very interesting. Yankees are unbelievable this year. 51-18. They're on pace for 120 wins, more than any Major League Baseball team literally in history. But because the Astros started 2-0, whenever they started this Gotham Gauntlet, we're like, you know what? Four of the nine wins would be okay. Like, let's be realistic. Best team in the NL, best team in the AL. You win four of those nine games with six of those coming on the road. You'd feel okay about that. 5 wins, you said, would feel very good. I saved a text the other day. Somebody texted us in and said 5-4 would be freaking awesome. Now that they started 2-0 in this 9-game stretch, does it reset those expectations?
I would only say that I would bump it by one. I would say that freaking awesome is in the realm of possibilities, and 5-4, if we're going to keep it real, that's realistic because you're still going on the road for the majority of what's left in this run of games. You know it is going to be raucous and it is going to be a tough environment in the Bronx. And so I think they could get one in New York, but I think that they'd be really doing something if they split with the Yankees in Yankee Stadium because of the fact that as good as Altuve's been and as much as he's put a lot behind him, he is going to catch hell for all four games, and Bregman's going to catch his, and they're going to be relentless. And they're obviously on a hot streak right now playing their best baseball, and they're still pretty much without injury, where the Astros are still trying to figure a lot of things out. They still got moving pieces. They also got some injuries to get over. So I would say how I would change it is I could see 5-4 now. I'd still be just fine with 4-5.
Now, I'm with you. Like, I'm still looking at these 9 games as these 9 games, even though you started 2-0 in those 9 games, because whenever you're talking about that before the 9 games, it's possible you could start 2-0. So I'm not going to change my expectations of this Gotham Gauntlet. If they go 4-5, still okay. If they go 5-4, I'm still going to be really happy about where the Houston Astros are, despite starting 2-0. Now, what if they steal the first 2 games in the Bronx? And now we're looking at a 4-0 start to this 9-game Gotham Gauntlet. Do you have to move the expectations then?
I still don't think you have to. You could, but I don't think you have to because pitching matchups matter. Again, lineups matter. I think the Mets are going to have the red ass coming back for you because they're trying to reestablish the entire franchise as a winner that should be considered a contender. So if they're playing the third best team in the league in the Astros and they get swept in Houston, they're going to have the red ass for you when you come to their ballpark to try and do the same to you to show that they can play too. So I think that if you can get one against the Mets, then that's fine. I think if you can get a split at Yankee Stadium, I think that is the best case scenario. And you get out of there and say and wave your goodbyes and with a smile on your face go, we're going to be just fine. Because this is the difference between the the two series against the Blue Jays where you lost a lot of one-run games, but you lost way more than you won. If you can come out close to 500 in this gauntlet of games, especially with the circumstances you're facing with injuries, great.
But if we said 4-5 was okay, and you steal the first 2 games against the Yankees, and you start 4-0 in that 9-game stretch, if you still feel okay about 4-5, that means you've lost the last 5 games of the Gotham
Gauntlet. It's still
Gauntlet.
Possible. I mean, you're going to get Verlander for one of those games. If you get good Verlander, you got a chance. If you don't,
right? But if you start 4-0, there's nothing else. You start 4-0, you've won the first 4 games, and then you know you lose the next 5. We said 4-5 was going to be okay in the Gotham Gauntlet, but if they start 4-0 and then lose the last 5, were you still
harder
okay
to swallow
with that?
Because now you're on a 5-game losing streak, which this team really hasn't done.
I still think I think it might move me a game. Like now I want a winning record. Like if you start 4-0, you better get that winning record,
right?
But overall, you still look at the 9-game stretch.
I think if you get to 4-0, you got to get one more win somewhere.
Yeah,
you got to come out with the freaking awesome 5-4 record.
Yep.
But yeah, losing 5 in a row after winning the first 4 would suck.
I think that's the one situation where I change my expectations. If you start 4-0 in the Gotham Gauntlet, you better get a winning record in the 9-game Gotham Gauntlet. What do you think, Hive? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Every day this week with the NBA draft coming up, we've been looking at one scenario for the Houston Rockets. Perhaps the unlikeliest scenario when we come back, but I want to take a look at all of the first-round draft picks for the Houston Rockets and some scenarios all along that as well. We do it on the other side. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I forgot to tell you this last segment because I was just so giddy to talk about the Astros. But whenever I went to use the bathroom during that last break, there was somebody in there listening to things on their phone. They were in the stall. They were listening to things on their phone, and it stunk badly. They were listening to things on their phone, and it stunk really bad.
What they were listening to stunk, or the actual aroma odor of the bathroom?
The odor was brutal.
Did you head for the hills and just get out?
Well, I mean, I had to take care of business, but I got out of there as quickly as I possibly could.
That's just rude.
Look, I'm with you I'm with you on listening to things while you're in the bathroom. Like, you shouldn't be listening to things while you're in the bathroom where other people can hear. I feel like that's not kosher. I feel like that's Bush League.
I agree.
All right. Cool. We're on the same page.
You know that I agree.
I wouldn't do it, but I don't think it would bother me.
I think it's Bush League. Mega Blast. Mega Blast said, I listen to the Killer Bees and the Crapper. Thanks for listening, Mega Blast 9.
That's a different story, JD.
Largo. No, I didn't do that, Largo. Anyways, Jabari Smith. We've been looking at a prospect every day this week with the NBA draft coming up tonight. Rockets draft 3. They draft 17. They draft 26. At least that's the picks that they have currently. Raphael Stone has proven to be a Will and Dylan son of a gun, and he talked yesterday about how aggressive they're going to be and how aggressiveness is in his DNA. Jabari Smith is the one of the top four prospects we've not talked about. I think we all agree that this is the least likely scenario for the Houston Rockets. Although there has been some talk that the Rockets would trade up to number
one. Up, but you'd have to give up 17 and more probably to get there.
And I think they would do it for Jabari or for Paolo, not Jabari. Which, if the Rockets trade up, I will blast Raphael Stone tomorrow.
Yeah, the only reason I would trade up is Jabari Smith.
Okay, and Jabari Smith, why do you like Jabari Smith?
Because I still think he, for as good as he's shown in 1 year of college basketball, I believe the ceiling is so high. I believe that he could be so much more because he has size, he has athleticism, but he has a shot already, and he can face the basket. But I believe he already has enough size where he can get inside and he can do some things. I believe that he's versatile. I believe that he's athletic. And I believe that with those things, the height and the ability to shoot the basketball, I think that for what he is now, what he could be, is the best of the three guys, in my opinion, in 5 years from now when we evaluate the skill set. Because I think there's a boom or bust with Chet. Mm-hmm. I think we've all said Paolo probably is the most polished to play now, but how much better will he get? I think with Jabari, he's got the best of both worlds. He's got enough talent to play now, but he also looks like long-term he could be a lot better.
I think he's going to be the best NBA player of this draft.
I completely agree.
Does Paolo have more offensive game than him as his rookie? Probably. Is Paolo long-term a better offensive player than Jabari? Not so sure.
I don't know about that.
I think Jabari's got really good handles. I don't think he always showed it in display at Auburn. He can step down. He can step back, knock in the three-point shot. And he's got such a good-looking shot. Mm-hmm. Like it looks like he's going to be a really good three-point shooter in the NBA. I love his size and his length and his athleticism. Like, he's a legit 6'10". He can jump. He can leap. He can rim protect. He can rebound. Now, he hasn't put it all together. Like, if that's the one thing that I'm going to nitpick Jabari Smith on, is that he hasn't really put it all together at Auburn. You could say, well, it's, you know, college game, it's difficult to do that, only a freshman, difficult to do that. But then defensively too, I think he has the best lateral movement of any of the three bigs that we've talked about, Paolo, Chet, and Jabari. The lateral movement can help out on the offensive end, but what really helps out is the defensive end. So he can get out on the perimeter and defend you, and then he also has the length where he can block shots in the paint. So I think he can guard the post and the perimeter, which I don't believe Chet can do, and I don't think Paolo Banchero can do year one. I think he can also protect the rim. So Jabari Smith, to me, we've been saying this since January, where we think that Jabari Smith is the number one player in this draft, and looks like everybody else is going to back us up on that. Now, again, probably not a likely scenario for the Houston Rockets, but there has been some rumors, some mild rumors, I don't think it's going to happen, but that the Rockets could trade up to number one. And I believe if they do that, they're probably trading up for Paolo, not Jabari. But what would be the most the Rockets would use to trade up to where you're not ticked off? Because for me, I call everybody's bluff. Oh, you're going to draft Paolo? Well, you draft Paolo, we'll take whoever's there at number three. I'm not giving up anything to move from three to number one outside of like a second round pick. So what's the most you could live with?
Number 26.
So you would do 3 and 26 for one.
I'd get 3 and 26 for one.
You'd feel okay about that. See, even that, I'm like, nah. Too much for me.
You got rid of Christian Wood. You got his money off the books. Mm-hmm. I think that the fact that a late first round pick to make sure you get the guy that you have earmarked as your guy and be the number one overall draft pick, I think it's fine. I think that we've already talked about packaging two picks to try and move up to get a second lottery pick. So if you're going to just do something that gets to guarantee that at least the first guy you get is the guy that you feel is the best fit with the best skill set that you personally need as a team,
yeah,
I think that's fine.
See, I think that the difference between us here is the fact that you don't like Chet, you know, because
it's not that I don't like him. I just don't believe that he's going to be the high side that everybody sees.
Well, let me rephrase. It's that I'm higher on Chet than you are.
Yes.
So, like, I would be willing to be – I'd be happy for Chet at number three where you're – it kind of makes you grimace a little bit. You're like, I don't know about Chet.
When you threw
Chet.
The medicals in the last couple of yeah. – you know, when we started hearing about the medicals, on top of the fact that I think that he's more of a project, he's the most of a project of these three guys.
Sure.
It's going to take him two, three years to really see what he can be. And I feel like the rest of this team, as orchestrated, is on a quicker path to see who they are and do what they want to do. That's another reason why I don't think he's the right fit here.
Sure. Like, I agree that Chet's more boom or bust than Paolo or Jabari, but I also feel like in order to win in the NBA, you need to have superstars, and I think Chet can be a superstar at some point.
Yeah, see, I don't see a superstar.
I think he can be Dirk. I think you can give him I think he can become something. I think he could be a scoring machine in the NBA. Now, I don't think that's right away. I don't think that's overnight. He needs a lot of polish to his game, and whenever you're projecting that he needs to be Dirk and he's nowhere near Dirk, that leaves a lot of hurdles along the way that can deter him from ever becoming Dirk. It's why I think he's boom or bust, and it's why I would pick him third on this list, but why I would be okay drafting him at number three and why I wouldn't give up 26-3 for number one.
Okay, but Jeremy, I'm trying to determine, like, if you think that Chet could be the 4-win Texans and then the ceiling could be that he could be the 12-win Texans, how long do you see the 8-win Texans being in the equation as we get it back to another conversation? I'm saying...
lost me there.
Because I'm going back to the guy's conversation of, like, when do you see the development? And, you know, you're
Well, I think he could help you tomorrow. I think Chet Holmgren could help tomorrow.
See, I'm not so sure, just simply because, like, the things you've already pointed out. I don't think laterally he moves very quick, so I don't think he can guard the way Christian Wood did on the perimeter. I think that when we talk about him being a rim protector and a shot blocker, he can, but he's going to be moved by a 6'6 Draymond Green. There's too many guys in the NBA. There's too many grown-ass men in this league that are going to move him around because he's just – I just saw highlights when we were in commercial break, and for as talented as he could be, he's so rail thin, and there's too many grown men in this league that are athletic and strong, and they might not be talented offensively, but they're going to move him around.
I agree with almost everything you say. I don't love the Draymond Green example. I do.
He's 6'6", but he's a sturdy guy.
But he's not a
guy.
Scorer.
No, I'm not saying from a scoring perspective. I'm saying – they're going to move him out of the lane. If he wants to go in the middle.
The thing with Chet is if you watch him defend the low post, because, I mean, you can watch the Memphis game in the tournament when they played Jalen Duren, who is an NBA player, who I don't even think Duren's going to be like an offensive weapon. So, like, you have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. He does get moved, and people do get around him because he is slow, but he also is, like, great at recovering because he's so long.
But
he's going to block the shot.
But if you also remember, he got in foul trouble, and it was kind of part of their demise when they got bumped out of the tournament.
But he also got Duren in foul trouble.
And that, but at the same time, in the league, he's going to have to learn how to play smart because of his limitations physically.
Right. I think that's where I'm at with it's going to take him a while to if his upside is Dirk Nowitzki, he's nowhere near that right now, and there's a lot of hurdles for him to become Dirk Nowitzki, which a lot of times if you have that much room to grow, you're never going to achieve that or get to that point. Now, if we're talking about Chet Holmgren as a rookie, I think he can help you out a decent amount. Not like rookie of the year, but I think he could be a stretch five next year. Do you lose a lot defensively with Chet Holmgren? Yeah, I think you could lose quite a bit defensively, but I also think he can be a weapon even next year offensively. Not in the sense that you're giving him the ball and you're letting him go score, but you put that guy out in the perimeter, you have to defend it. If you're playing him at the five, you have to defend it. And if he's out at the five and you're defending that, it creates all sorts of spacing.
But again, he's going to run the floor, but he's not going to get the shots that he got in college, and he's going to have guys that might be shorter but are going to be able to get up right in his grill and be able to defend him closer to where he's going to have to prove that he can shoot over people. He has the reach. He has the ability.
I don't think that'll be a problem.
I think in transition especially, I think it could be because he can run the floor, but if he's not going to get wide open butt naked looks from three. He's going to have guys closing out. He's going to have guys that get up on him.
Sure.
And that's a different kind of skill set to develop.
But if you're playing him at the five, I'm not even looking for him to make those shots. Now you have to respect his ability to make
the
shot.
Out.
Yeah, I mean, imagine nobody in the paint for Jalen Green to isolate against a defender, and there's like it's a five-out offense. Like, if it's a five-out offense, which you can play with Chet Holmgren because he can knock down the three at a five position. Now, very small for the five, I give you that. Defensively, you got some challenges, but that's a defensive nightmare. A five-out offense with Jalen Green isolating, and then you have to respect Chet Holmgren out in the corner because he can knock down a three, even if he's not making the shot. It's going to change the way you defend.
I mean, it can. Yes, it can. But when I look at him and say, okay, because of the fact that I think it's going to be an adjustment for him to have to shoot over defenders, because of the fact that the physicality is going to have a negative effect on him. And because the speed of the game is going to be, no matter how fast they thought they played at Gonzaga a year ago, he has no idea how fast this game is going to go in the NBA, and that's an adjustment. So, you know, then I go back and I hear Billis on, and he says, the comp is Giannis. No, it's not.
No, that's a terrible comp.
It can't. There's no way. And we were saying that
I like the Dirk comp way more than Giannis.
I think the highest of high side is Dirk.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the fairest of low sides is either Lauri Markkanen or Porzingis.
I think the Porzingis comp is
because Porzingis
fair one.
Never put on the weight, but he still is an effective above average NBA player.
Yeah, off injuries derailed him. Look, I don't think we're far off on Chet. And to be honest with you, I think Chet's number three of these big three.
I agree.
I think where we have the little bit of a microscopic difference is I don't want the Rockets to trade up for number three. I call everybody's bluff, and if it means you end up with Chet, you end up with Chet. We posted that poll earlier on ESPN 97.5. We were playing Price is Right rules. Who do you want tonight, Paulo, Chet, or Jaden Ivey? We were trying to predict the percentages. What did you say again?
82%.
82%. Paulo won the vote, but he wanted it 71.5%. And since I went 1%, Price is Right rules.
You said $1. $1 is a bad answer. You're disqualified because you went dollars instead of percentages. So you're, for that reason alone, you're out.
I'm with Joel here. You didn't go.
See, there you go. You didn't follow the rules. Once again, you did not follow the rules.
All right, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, two lies and a truth about the Houston Astros, and is Jordan Alvarez the most irreplaceable player in Houston sports right now? We'll discuss with one of the Wheelhouse men next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Framber Valdez Day for the Houston Astros tonight.
Where's our... there it is. Okay.
Chill. It's coming. Chill.
All right.
Framber Valdez versus the greater Houston area native Jameson Taillon, who pitched at the Woodlands High School.
He's having
a pretty good season. It's a very good pitching matchup between the two today. Framber Valdez, second best pitcher on the Houston Astros, 7-3 record, 2.78 ERA. Taillon's got more wins, 8-1, and he's got a better ERA, 2.70, than Framber. I've not seen the Astros lineup. Yankees lineup is out, and I've not seen any roster moves yet for the Houston Astros. See if those are coming. Cody Stutes hanging out with us. You can listen to him each and every day. On the Wheelhouse, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
How do you say this?
Rent Furniture.
Guy's name? Taillon?
Jameson Taillon.
Taillon.
He has a very weird element to his year. He has the exact same ERA as he does at home and away.
Really? So they must be playing with the same balls there in New York.
That's very strange. Framber, much better.
Well,
the
they change him out every half inning.
What's Framber's splits?
1.61 ERA at on the road.
Really?
Yep.
That's good.
So he's worse at Minute Maid. I wonder why. That's
short
weird.
Porch.
Yeah, but he's a ground ball pitcher.
That's true.
4-2-1.
But he changed
ERA.
He was struggling for a little bit.
At home.
Yeah,
early on, but early on, there was a lot of road games.
Yeah, that's weird. I didn't know that about his splits. That's good, because he's pitching on the road today in the Bronx. We'll see how he handles all that.
I think it's weirder, too, that they got four in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, the schedule makers, even before the goofiness that was moved those first six games, the schedule makers did not do a good job on this, in my opinion.
Because they're playing so many... Why?
Well, you should have just broken up different.
Okay.
Or had four of them. Or had four of them in Houston.
Four in Houston.
Yeah.
Okay. So
normally
the Astros
you don't
are going to play
in New York
85 games at home.
For this whole week. Normally you would mix in a trip to Boston or a trip to somewhere. They'd have them travel kind of out and then back in.
You don't find the two and
I mean, it's
two
true, the way
with
the schedule
Mets
makers do it
to be goofy?
Well, a lot of times, no, because, you'll go play the Lakers-Clippers on a West Coast trip.
That is true.
So, a lot of times, if it's an interleague and we're seeing more interleague, especially next year, then, it kind of makes sense.
But that was a change in philosophy after COVID so that they didn't have to be in on airplanes as much and changing hotels and things like that. That's why they did what they did in the NBA.
It's good from, a miles long. They're saving gas in this climate. I think it's a great idea.
Hey, I ain't trying to save none of these Major League Baseball owners any money. Spend.
I want them to save money.
And
so
I don't
they
want the finals going
salaries.
Back to 2-3-2 either.
Yeah. All right. Two lies and a fact on the Astros.
Okay.
Alex Bregman is a higher on base percentage than Jose Altuve. Uh-huh. Kyle Tucker leads the Astros in games played. Michael Brantley leads the team in hits. Which one is the fact?
You were listening. You
two
cheated.
Lies. One of them's a fact.
One of them's a fact?
Just one. Only one of them's a fact. The other two are lies. They're right here if you need to look at them again.
Oh, Bregman on base percentage than Altuve.
Does that surprise you that Alex Bregman has recorded less outs by percentage than Jose Altuve has this year?
It does not surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, however?
It means though? You were listening earlier.
It means he's not getting out when you get 27 of them.
Sure.
Are walks
sure.
factored in, though?
Then on base, yeah.
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 So here's the thing, though. I would rather my number three hitter put the ball in play more than get on base.
I don't disagree with that.
So, yes, that it... I'm shocked that Tucker doesn't lead the team in games played.
Yep. That's what I said.
Bregman does.
That was my answer.
Ironically.
Huh.
Isn't that weird that Bregman, who's been reeling,
who has more who has more
not
hits
with
than
Dusty, it's not weird. Yeah. It's pretty much par for the course.
Yeah. That's true.
Who has more hits than Brantley?
So one player on the Jordan. Astros has one more hit than Brantley does.
Oh,
you're MVP candidate.
Yeah. Crazy Mr. June.
Yeah.
Dude is amazing. We're watching one of the best single season offensive seasons in Houston Astro history with Yordan Alvarez.
They should just let, for one of the four games, Yordan and Aaron Judge have a home run derby.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
It sounds like I would love that, but not in place of one of the games. Like, let's get that on All-Star weekend during the home run derby, but not to take the place of one of the games.
All right, just have them fight to the death then.
Okay, sure. It seems like an outrageous opinion.
I don't know.
I'd like to see Aaron Judge get his ass kicked, but I mean,
who wins
aside
that
from
fight?
That, Yordan. Oh, Yordan. Or Judge? I think Yordan beats the daylights out of him.
Judge is a massive human being, but so is Yordan.
So is Yordan.
I'll go Yordan.
I think Yordan's got a little angrier streak in him when he wants to.
Yeah, Yordan's got an unpleasant look on his face more often than
mm-hmm.
Yeah, like resting face
uh-huh.
with Yordan Alvarez.
Phil Maton has it, but I call it resting pitch face.
Yeah, he does have
He's
it,
He's got
too.
Worse than that. He's got
Brantley has it a little bit,
face.
Too. I think Brantley has it quite a bit, too. He always looks a little bit grumpy.
He does the David Culley a lot with his tongue.
Yeah.
Brantley always looks like he just smelled a fart. Somebody must be gassy.
I did that when I walked into the bathroom earlier. That was amazing. I don't know who it was that was in there, but
in
it
a
was
negative
not
way,
good.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing in a negative
I,
way.
I did that. Yeah, I walked like, in the bathroom. It was amazing.
Walk in and Hold smell on. Something atrocious. I mean, that was amazing.
Phrasing.
Well, I mean, amazing in the sense of like it was a lot different than the usual.
It singed my nose hair. It was awesome.
Is Yordan Alvarez the most irreplaceable player in Houston sports right now, speaking of number 44?
Oh, yeah. The batting average for the team drops 20 points if you take out Yordan's contribution in June. The June batting average, which is the best offensive month for the Astros to this point, you take out Yordan, batting average drops 20 points. I think the on-base percentage drops almost 40 points.
With no Yordan?
Yeah, he's... And it's real power. It's real power when the baseballs are dead.
He's on pace for 50. He's on pace to break Jeff Bagwell's single-season record that he set first year at Inrun.
I would love to see baseball make the baseball change and get a little home run race going.
Get a little hotter?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Because I wouldn't want that because I think when you talk about the ratio of home run hitters in lineups – I don't know that anybody has the kind of home run hitting lineup the Yankees have.
I think it's one of the, and you don't want that, what is it the managers used to complain about, that number nine hitter that could just flick one around the foul pole, like, just
yeah, you got,
the
you
balls
got a,
are crazy.
You got a toy box, as Jeremy calls it, in right field in Yankee Stadium,
Williams
and you got four guys that can absolutely launch in their lineup. I don't think I'd be all for that.
Well, here's my thing. Make the summer more interesting with a bunch of offense, and then go back to the normal baseballs right around playoff time.
Weather's going to do that anyways, though. Ball travels more whenever it's hotter out. So mm-hmm. the natural fact of summer being hot is going to lead to more offensive numbers.
Just give it a little extra. I want to see some guys pushing 65.
You want them to do steroids and have
that
aluminum bats?
That doesn't affect
bats?
If Minute Maid roof is closed,
that'd
though,
be awesome, Jeremy.
Brandon, does that affect it if it's the roof is closed at Minute Maid?
I don't think so as much because it's still like the air.
It's still the atmosphere.
Yeah, but also like the humidity leads to less ball flight, which – isn't always great for Houston because we all know Houston's very, very, very humid. The only other player that I would put on this list, because I agree with you, I think it's Yordan by a mile, but I think it's a better conversation for like who's second on this list, most irreplaceable player in Houston sports right now. For me, it's Justin Verlander.
I said Green's in the conversation. But because the
is
only
Davis
team winning
Mills
in the city
in the conversation,
the only team winning in the city is the Astros. So it's easily understandable to have the two guys come off that team. But I think because you've established him as the future of your franchise, unlike Davis Mills, I think Green would be on the list.
I'd put Fromber ahead of Verlander.
Ooh,
that's a hot take. Wilhouse coming up 3-7. Why would you go Fromber ahead of JV?
Well, what are the parameters like hard to replace?
Like the guy you can't lose, irreplaceable.
Yeah,
you can't replace him.
Well, they went to the show last year with Fromber doing his thing, and he's even better this year.
But if you lose your ace, and when you lost Lance, it shows you how important the ace is, and when you lose him, you're a different team.
True. They still got through Boston, though, in large part thanks to Fromber.
How much did Fromber help in 2017 when Justin Verlander was leading a pitching staff to the World Series victory, the only one in franchise history?
Okay, well, that's not a comparative.
It's the same thing
situation
that you used. It's the exact same information you used. I just flipped the year, and I flipped the players.
No, that's not the same.
Disagree. People are asking about you on Who Said It.
Yeah, that's a you guys decision.
What do
you guys
think,
want me to come in here and win the championship, you guys let me on tomorrow at 2. If you guys want to have your lineup of slappies like Rocky did in Rocky 3.
Who are you calling a slappy?
So if you really want to be a part of this, I don't think you should come in guns a-blazing with your doses of negativity. I think you should be open arm to say, I would love to join your wonderful segment on the show.
See, I disagree with that. I disagree. You got to sell the fight. That's not going to get pay-per-view buys. Please let me fight you guys.
Look,
no, it's got to be the way.
Well, I love what you guys are doing. I want to be a part of it. It's fun.
If Mick over there wants to line up a bunch of tomato cans for you guys.
You calling then, Paulie Gallon a tomato can? You calling Josh Beard a tomato can?
Tomato cans.
Both of them, huh?
Tomato cans.
Now, here's the other part of this, Brendan.
Brand tomato can.
Can you do a Who Said It without the Wilhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We don't use much of their stuff anyway.
What are you talking about? I did it without Paul Gallant.
Oh, yeah. Brendan's got Paul Gallant posters hanging up in his room. It's really weird. What's coming up on the Wilhouse today?
We got lots of fun stuff. We're going to talk to Mike Florio at 5:30. A ton of basketball stuff. I got a weird question that I think BK is going to be able to answer. Compare these top basketball prospects at the top of the draft to who they were in the NFL draft. Which player is it? If you were comparing the NFL players to the top NBA players, we'll have to figure that out. I'm going to pick BK's brain about that. Also,
how much do you think BK is going to talk about Arch Manning today?
Yeah, really?
I want to talk about Arch Manning. It's really interesting.
How much do you think BK is going to talk about Arch Manning today?
Quite a bit.
All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. See what the Rockets do in the NBA draft tonight. Wilhouse coming up next, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.